This is WGCU, University Heights.
It's 5 o'clock in the Rock and Roll City. I'm Jumpin' Joe Madigan, and I am joined right now. It's a great honor to have him here in the studio from the Lost Souls and the Choir, Denny Carlton.
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
Oh, I'm great. I mean, what a perfect day it is today.
Beautiful. Unbelievable.
For early April, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Did you have a hard time finding a parking spot here today?
I did not.
Good.
Yeah, we did. We went around in circles one time, but every time I've gone to John Carroll, I have gone around in circles one time. I don't know. I don't mean anything deep by that.
When I got here, I was in a panic because there was something going on here at campus, and it was just driving me nuts.
No, it was here. Actually, after we kind of got our bearings, it was easy.
All right. Good deal. Oh, you lucked out today. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
All right, So there's a lot to talk about here. So I thought, you know what? The easiest place to start is from the very beginning, and that would be in the year 1964, the year we feature today on Retro Radio. And I always ask people who lived through that era, tell me about the night you saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show.
I had heard about the Beatles. I watched the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. I got excited. I wanted to play music in some way. So I talked to Larry Tomczak, our drummer, who had the exact same feeling, who ended up being the drummer for the Lost Souls. And we both decided to start a band. And then we took lessons for 9 months. And then I've been doing music ever since. After 9 months, we played in the Lost Souls. And we started playing 9 months later. Myself and about 4 or 5 other people from St. Joe's High School, which is now VA St. Joe's.
A little aside here, because you mentioned lessons. I was over at my in-laws recently, and my sister-in-law, her name is Rachel, she was talking about how she's taking guitar lessons. And I said, oh, yeah, who's your teacher? She said, Denny Carlton. I'm like, Denny Carlton? Denny Carlton, really? She goes, yeah. And I said, do you know who he is? She said, yes, he's my guitar teacher. She had no idea about your career in the 1960s with the Lost Souls. That is so. It was an incredible time in the 1960s to play music. Just reading about it in the books here, and even going on stage.
Yeah. When we started, and our very first gig that we had was literally in my parents' garage. So we really were a garage band, and we started for the very first time my parents' garage, and within everybody liked us, and we ended up then playing. Euclid was like a little park at the end of the street by where Holy Cross Church is, or now it's Our Lady of the Lake, and from then on that circuit of all the CYOs, the Catholic Youth Organizations. We played all of those. We ended up playing the Hullabaloos and played everywhere. And as you said, it was like, what a phenomenal time to be growing up as far as music. I mean, this stuff's going to last forever, don't you think? The Beatles, the Stones, Jimi Hendrix, the Who, the whole bit, Led Zeppelin,
I got into a conversation with a coworker recently, and we were talking about this era of music, and I said, it's amazing how fast music evolved in the 1960s. I mean, you go from Please, Please Me to two years later, Tomorrow Never Knows. It's like, what? And yeah. It's amazing how it evolved so fast.
Yeah.
And you look at the music that's being pushed on the radio today from 2000 to 2019, and you can't tell a difference when it was recorded. So, I mean, it's just become stagnant. So that's why I'm so drawn to the 1960s. It's just such a fascinating, diverse era of rock and roll.
I think maybe the artist ran the industry there for a while. I think somehow there was like the way it happened. I think that was part of it. It was just, and I think that some of the people who had been calling the shots in New York and Los Angeles or London or wherever, they didn't know what they were doing. So they say, well, maybe this will work. How about the peanut butter conspiracy? How about the strawberry alarm clock? You know, whatever. You know, they didn't know. They had no background in that. Because once in a while, even back then, you'd meet people in the industry who are not part of the British invasion or from that wave, and they didn't seem to have a clue of like what we were. We might have been aliens.
Frank Zappa talked about that. There's a clip of him on YouTube.
I know. I think. Well, I don't know the quote, but that's what I was going to say, Frank Zappa. What were you going to say?
Oh, he talks just what you just said there. I mean, people, they didn't know what they had in their hands, so they just threw it out there, and whatever stuck. And that's how a lot of bands got got started.
How fortunate, though. I mean, you know, that happened that way. Even like someone like Van Morrison, what a distinguished career he's had with every kind of music possibly since the 60s. He was in Them, you know, he wrote Gloria. But I don't think they would have really given those kind of bands contracts if they had really, you know, I mean, they just didn't know. They gave Franz Zappa a contract, right? Or no, he probably was self-published, I'm not sure.
Well, he was on Verve Records.
Verve Records, yeah.
Which was a jazz label.
Well, think about it.
And they throw out the Freak Out album in June of 66, and I'm sure they were freaking out. So, speaking of albums, you got something on CD now. It's a collection of the Lost Souls, and it's brand new on CD now.
Yeah, and what's amazing, Lionheart Productions, they tell me that that's going to be vinyl this year. This year, there's going to be a vinyl of 2019.
Fantastic.
That is fantastic.
Is it going to be a double album?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Because there's 26 tracks here on the CD.
There'll be slightly different tracks on that, and I'm not sure why he chose that. He said sometimes on the vinyl mixing, the certain mistakes from the old days show up more, maybe more hissing and things like that. As a lot of these are, some of these are really good recordings. Other ones are recordings that have been passed through. You know, I published my own music on cassettes in the 1980s, and I was on college radio. You know, some of these, the generations of things that get passed down, you lose a bit, so... There's going to be a vinyl release of it, you know.
Oh, that's great. We'll be on the lookout for that. So, how many singles did you release with the Lost Souls?
Lost Souls never had any actually legitimate singles. We never put any records out.
No kidding.
Isn't that a shame?
Well, I know somebody who has some vinyl copies.
Of I Love, I Won't Admit. I think someone kind of made that up later on in life.
Wow.
Oh, I shouldn't have probably said that, maybe. Because it's cool. It's on, like, Gem or something like that. It's a green label.
Okay.
Yeah, that didn't come out in the 60s.
So that's super rare then, probably.
Yeah, I think I know who did it, but I'm not positive. I think I know who pressed that.
Yeah, look at the Beatles on VJ. There's so many bootlegs of that album. So it wasn't uncommon for there to be bootlegs back then. But now it's finally released officially for the first time.
Yeah, and that Lost Soul thing, in the 1980s, I put a lot of these things out on cassette during the Option Magazine era. I don't know if your listeners know that, but there was a lot of self-publishing in the 80s. And I published my own music, and I put out the Lost Souls. And during that time, there were many people that wanted to license it. And for one reason or another, it always fell through. So I finally gave up. Every time the Lost Souls got close to being licensed by someone, it fell through from 1980 to Lionheart Productions. And that almost fell through. And so that finally came out. But how long? It's kind of crazy how long it took for that to come out in a really professional format like that.
Well, let's hear cut one on the CD from the Lost Souls. Here is Love, I Won't Admit.
Be another line for love.
The Lost Souls and Love I Won't Admit, officially released for the first time on CD last year. I'm Jumpin' Joe Madigan, and Denny Carlton joins me here in the studio.
Jumpin' Joe.
So I got to know the technical aspects of, about these recordings. Where were these recorded, by the way?
Love I Won't Admit was at Audio Recording, which is by the WKYC building in downtown Cleveland. So was Look at Me and Walking Out of Me, the first three cuts. Then there was a session in Cleveland Recording, which became Summa Recording. And Cleveland Recording, the things that are important, Let's Get Away, Dare to Surmise, If These Are Men, those were all done at Summa or Cleveland Recording, which is now, they moved from downtown Cleveland, which was situated exactly in Playhouse Square building, is where WVIZ is and National Public Radio. They moved out of there, out to Vrooman Road in Painesville.
That's way out there.
That's way out there. So, and then they lived happily ever after there for many years, and then that Summa just kind of went under. Everybody passed away, which was just about a year or two ago.
Well, so many records of the 1960s were recorded there. I know the Lemon Pipers recorded Green Tambourine there, and there's probably a host of others. I think maybe Grand Funk Railroad or Terry Nine in the Pack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Grand Funk. Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of history there, and so you're in
that. What a cool location. Wouldn't that be cool if there was a recording studio right there, you know, Playhouse Square?
It would be fitting.
It would be fitting.
Especially with the whole, you know, the theme that we're out-of-towners, when they think about Cleveland, they think Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I know Clevelanders here, they don't really think that way, but the out-of-towners, they just know, Cleveland, rock and roll capital of the world, and the Cleveland Indians are hosting the All-Star Game this year, and they got a guitar logo for the All-Star Game, so everything seems to be themed that way, and there were
many thoughts about Cleveland as a center of music in its time. In the 70s, there was an article that we were the new Liverpool. I don't know if you know, Circus Magazine, one of them came out, Cleveland's a new Liverpool, think about it, an industrial city by the lake, by a port, all of that talent, you know. But, I think Cleveland does have all of that. But, you know, I think back when we were kids, there wasn't a lot of older people who had the vision or the money. I'd say more the vision to nurture that.
I got to ask you.
What are you going to do?
I got to ask you about some of the live shows you did, especially at the teen fairs. I have a radio recording of WKYC from late August, early September 1967. It's Jack Armstrong on WKYC, and he's talking about the teenage fair and the band, the Penny Arcade.
Oh, yeah, they beat us.
Won the Battle of the Bands. And you mentioned that you were there, and you said you came in fourth or third?
I don't know who came in second or third, but we know the Penny Arcade came in first. The next year we played the James game with Joe Walsh won. A tough competition back in those days.
It doesn't help that in 68 you were disqualified, though.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
Well, the first one, when you said Penny Arcade, we came on, we were a good band, we were a local band, we could play British Invasion, and we could play Motown because we had a saxophone, we were original. But they came out, and they looked like the Beatles of Sgt. Pepper, and they made their amplifiers look like alarm clocks, and they made it all look real Beatle-ish with, you know, like little, they look like little English things. You know, they changed their amps around theatrically, and they were really good. They were like kind of a Beatles imitation band. They beat us. The next year, I don't know a lot of things that went on there. I was sort of in my own world. Artistic type, wanting just to play music, staying at home a lot, and wow, I'm going to stay home and practice my guitar. But there was stuff going on there that I don't exactly know, that was with the other parts of the band, and somewhere someone had the idea that we all decided we were going to change our name from the Lost Souls to Minervercivi, which is a reference to a poem about Minervercivi, the child of scorn. I don't remember the whole bit, but it's a kind of a sad poem.
Poetry is not my strong suit.
Yeah, so I don't remember even the poem, but it was kind of a sad poem. But we took that name, which lasted about, like when I was in the choir, we changed our name to White Rain for 2 weeks. not a good name. And then we changed our name from, because it was a shampoo called White Rain. Right. And then we changed our name in the Lost Souls for about 2 weeks to Miniver Chivi. Well, someone ended up putting us in as the Lost Souls and Miniver Chivi, and we were disqualified because we put our name in twice.
What a shame.
And I didn't know any of that. I just was ready to show up and play and be happy.
You could have said you beat the James gang.
We could have run for their money.
And then there's another show you did with the Lost Souls at Cleveland Municipal Stadium.
Yes.
That's incredible. And it was quite the bill, too. You had the Lemon Pipers and Bobby V.
Bobby V, like a rubber ball, I'll come bounce. That's kind of like a different era.
Yeah, a strange bill, but there were a lot of those back then. I mean, I think the Monkees opened up for the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
And, I think I was there.
And the Who opened up for Herman's Hermits. It was
one of those.
It was pretty wild.
Yeah,
the show that you did at Cleveland Municipal Stadium, based on what you wrote in your book, which is called Welcome to My World, it sounded very reminiscent of how the Beatles show went in August of 66.
Well, you got caught up in the atmosphere back then, and everybody was screaming for all of the different bands as long as you sort of looked like that tribe, you know, of long-haired guys, you know. But we came up and... we played, and it was a little unreal. You couldn't hear your sound. When the Beatles say that they would play and they didn't want to tour anymore because they couldn't hear anything because of the screaming, or even the acoustics at the Cleveland Stadium, that old stadium, 80,000 people would hold, and there was only 15. So it wasn't indistinguishable towards, you know... anything. And what Danny Merrick pointed out is that the Beatles had played there 2 weeks before, and we were the next band, and then there was no stage. They brought the stage out, and we were the next people on there after the Beatles, which was like Danny brought. And I thought, that's kind of cool. I never thought of it. The one thing that's the funniest thing for there is, you know, back then we were in the dugout of the baseball stadium, and then you'd go back out of the dugout, and then you'd go into this dressing room. So at the end of our set, we went out, and I was maybe 17 years old, and I went to the dressing room, and we were with the Lemon Pipers, and all of a sudden, just like the movies, there was probably 100 teenage girls, very cute, you know, very cute, chasing us. And it was really scary. I don't know if you can imagine why that would be scary, but it was scary. And we tried to get into the dressing room, and I remember being really afraid that we were going to get crushed because the girls weren't stopping. It was like a stampede. And we all got in there, and we sat around with the Lemon Pipers, and it was like, whoa, man, that was something else, you know?
Yeah, very reminiscent of what happened when the Beatles came, because the only thing separating the Beatles from the fans at Cleveland Stadium was a snow fence, and they all just rushed the stage, and people were getting they were suffocating because they're getting pushed up on the stage, and it's just people pushing up, and finally they managed somehow miraculously to get back, and nobody wound up getting hurt, which is a miracle.
Yeah. It's sort of mass hysteria, or maybe some sort of cultural phenomenon that was going on back then, because in a way, we weren't the Beatles, you know? we weren't the Beatles, but they were just chasing someone that looked like that, and I don't think we made that big of an impression that day.
That's fascinating. It really is.
Yeah, it's like another life, although it seems totally real to me. Down in me is that guy that was running away, you know, thinking I was going to get crushed, you know?
Well, let's hear another one from The Lost Souls. How about Walking Out on Me?
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, let's do it. The Lost Souls on Retro Radio. There's that studio banter at the very end there. Now, you mentioned that there are bootlegs made of The Lost Souls, and I do have a recording from that bootleg featuring Walking Out on Me, and it fades out before that studio banter.
I did not know that. The studio banter is fun.
Yeah.
That's odd. There was a guy named Ray Taylor who managed the choir, and I always think when people, sometimes they'll hear The Lost Souls for the first time, and they think back of that era, and they say, well, how come that band didn't make it? And I always say, we were kids raised by blue-collar parents, and we had a blue-collar manager. He was our Little League baseball coach, who then became the manager, and we didn't know what we were doing business-wise. We didn't know how to take this next step, so we just made these recordings. Nobody said do them tighter or anything. We just made them recordings. Where the choir, who ended up doing, you know, bigger, became the choir with a hit, and then they ended up evolving, morphing into the Raspberries, some of them. They always had that business. They had a guy or two that really knew the business a little bit. And Ray Taylor, who was their manager, took a liking to the Lost Souls. He saw that maybe we could be another band out of Cleveland. So this song, Look At Me, and the next song, Walking Out of Me, which we're not going to play right now, but it's the kind of same type of poppy song. It's an unknown writer from New York City who we never got the name of him, and so even it's listed as the unknown writer.
No kidding.
We don't know who wrote that.
Wow. Well, all the stuff now, all the recordings are on CD, all the Lost Souls stuff, even some live performances, and even some choir tracks along with some things later after the choir.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the choir a little bit later, but we want to talk about some of the more creative stuff you did with The Lost Souls.
I think of myself as a super creative person. I mean, that's kind of what I live for besides God, you know, and my wife. But, I feel super creative. But the other guys in the band were really creative on these. You know, my songs tend to be, I would say, more normal for the time. My songs, Love I Won't Admit, Things That Are Important to Me, they're kind of popular, a little bit quirky. But my friends Chuck and Denny really had something going there that I wasn't piped into. So we could listen to any of those. I mean, the one that we were going to play was Dare to Surmise, right?
I got it ready to go.
Now, this one has a melodica. It goes into a kind of an odd pop song. This is a Denny Merrick song. And in the middle, there's this instrumental piece that sounds like a different tonal scale than I've ever played since or before. And I think you'll know what I mean.
Well, let's hear it. Denny Carlton's in the studio with me, and we're going to hear The Lost Souls and Dare to Surmise.
Must die. Don't you think it's about time for a change?
Don't you think it's about time for a change?
Don't you think it's about time for a change?
Don't you think it's about time for a change?
Don't you think it's about time for a change?
Don't you think it's about time for a change?
Don't you think it's about time?
Don't you think it's about time
for a change?
Dig it.
The
Lost Souls from circa 1967 with Dare to Surmise, and that went all over the place.
Yeah, we had a little Who, we had a little Jefferson Starship, Jefferson Airplane, a little bit of, all kinds of things. Which one are we going to put on there, Joe? You thinking?
Well, you know what? Yeah, we're gonna do the one that you wanted, Let's Get Away.
Let's Get Away.
And then we're going to transition into how you wound up in the choir, and then I got to ask you about one of the songs you guys did. So you might know what it is, but if you don't, well, it'll be a surprise.
Okay, I have a feeling. So this is Let's Get Away?
This is Let's Get Away, The Lost Souls.
This is Chuck McKinley's song.
Time for love to go.
The Lost Souls and Let's Get Away. We heard a lot of different sounds on that one.
I think they do their festive dance. I think the Lost Souls used to do a festive dance after that. That little speeds up at the end. So all joined arms in a circle.
Yeah, we heard a lot of influences there from the Association and the Turtles with that one.
Yeah.
So Denny Carlson joins me here in the studio. He's got a record out. Well, actually, it's a collection of recordings of the Lost Souls and some after Lost Souls stuff, and we'll talk about that in a little while here. But it's on CD for the first. It's officially released for the first time ever.
Can we say where to get it?
Sure.
Well, Lion Productions has it. You can get it at Bomp Records. Bomp Records, the famous Bomp Records, has it. And you could go to my website and do it, DennyCarlton.com. There's another distributor, which if you go to my website, there's another distributor. And right now I can't remember the name of the other distributor, but there's only three in the United States.
And it's going to be on vinyl soon.
It's going to be on vinyl.
That's incredible.
I think the booklet is one of the things that's really nice. It's 32 pages.
Yeah, that was the pleasant surprise opening this up. And it's just there's some incredible Polaroid pictures in here in color. It's really cool. So if you lived through the mid-1960s or are fascinated with the mid-1960s, this is something to really take a look at here. So there's another song you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Tell us about this.